Now here's your moderator, Todd Faulkner.
And refrain from responding to any candidate's comments. We want to be able to ask as many questions as possible, and if there is applause or heckling, we just can't get that done. Thank you for your cooperation in that. At this time, please join me in welcoming to the stage Attorney General Andy Beshear and Governor Matt Bevin. All right, before we get started here, run through the format and the guidelines so everybody's on the same page. We will start with opening statements from our candidates, followed by a chamber question, then questions from our media panel, and then the candidates' closing statements. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for their statements and responses. Candidates will be given a 30-second warning indicated by the amber lights to conclude their responses. A 10-seconds remaining sign will be held by a timekeeper, and when your time is up, the red lights will indicate that you must stop. If you continue beyond your allotted time, I will politely interrupt you. For our media panel, you have 30 seconds to ask your question, and you will also receive a 10-second warning indicated by the sign to conclude your question. A red light means stop. If you go beyond your allotted time, same rules. I will politely interrupt you. Remember, you may only ask one question during your allotted time, and it must be pertinent to the business community and not on social issues. We want to welcome our live audience tuning in now to the Paducah Chamber of Commerce as we bring you the opportunity to hear the views of Kentucky's gubernatorial candidates on issues of importance to our business community. Joining us are Republican Matt Bevin and Democrat Andy Beshear. Serving as sponsor for our forum of the Paducah Area Chamber of Commerce is Paducah Bank and Trust. As stated, we will start with opening statements, followed by forum question, media panel, and so forth. To those in the TV viewing audience tuning in right now, know that we have asked our audience in attendance to refrain from any applause or heckling. The packed crowd here at Julian Carroll Convention Center is a little more than 530 people. Now, serving on our media panel, Jennifer Horbell, WPSD Local 6 anchor, Carrie Dillard, the Paducah Sun editor, Greg Dunker, WKYX, WKYQ Radio, and host of The Greg Dunker Show, Ryland Barton, Capitol reporter for Kentucky Public Radio, which includes WKMS and Murray State University. Now, prior to our event, the candidates had a coin toss for who would go first. So we begin with opening statements, and we begin with Attorney General Andy Beshear, sir.
Well, let me first thank the Paducah Chamber of Commerce. Many years ago, I served on a committee for a Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate what you do. And it is good to be back in Western Kentucky. I love that motto that we will be noticed by our presence. Folks, this is my seventh time in Paducah in this general election alone, and I'm going to be back on Saturday. I believe in presence. But I hope that doesn't surprise you, because my family comes from right down the road in Dawson Springs in Hopkins County. It's because of that I was raised with what I think are Western Kentucky values of faith, family, and hard work. And that is why I will always tell you the truth. And the truth is, Kentucky can and should be doing better. We have the third lowest per capita income in the country. But what does that mean? It means our families are the third poorest in the country. Last year, over 70 counties had their unemployment increase. And it wasn't more than a month ago that we lost over 600 jobs down in Murray to a non-right-to-work state. What we're here to talk about today is vision. I will be offering one. I don't think my opponent will. It's a vision that not only lifts up Kentucky, but specifically lifts up Western Kentucky. Just look at our jobs plan. It starts with investing in industries where we can create six-figure jobs all over Kentucky, but we can make Western Kentucky an international leader. Look at our focus on agritech. We got to increase the world's food supply 70% in the next 30 years, and we ought to be creating those jobs right here. It's everything from the science in the seed to the technology on the tractor. And then I have an infrastructure plan to back it up. We are going to build that I-69 bridge in my very first term, and we are going to focus on rural roads. We have the seventh most dangerous roads in the country, which means you put your kids in a car to ride on a road that should be safer. I'm going to judge how I do as governor, not by overall jobs, but by jobs I create right here in Western Kentucky.
All right, Mr. Attorney General, thank you. And Governor, your opening statement.
I want to thank you as well, Attorney General Beshear. Thank you for being here. Thanks for giving people this opportunity. Grateful to our hosts, grateful to those that are going to be asking questions. This is a big decision. We've got 5 weeks, a little less than 5 weeks. You're going to choose one of the two of us to be the governor of this state for the next 4 years. Most of you know my background. Just to remind you briefly, I'm a guy that grew up in a pretty simple way, well below the poverty level in terms of dollars, but blessed to be raised by a mother and father who taught us that things like hard work, respect for God and country, respect for making sure you give an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, simple things, things that frankly business owners, you know, you understand this. Those of you that are here and have grown up in this community, you understand these things. I'm grateful to have been raised to love this nation, to respect America, the men and women who are in uniform, both protecting and serving us in the local community, those that have served to defend us and defend this nation in military uniform. I'm a business guy. I'm a military veteran. I'm a father of nine. I'm the only one that you'll hear from today in the course of the next 5 weeks that's ever actually created a job in the private sector. So there'll be a lot of talk about jobs, and it's important that we talk about these things. But I'm the only one on the stage that's ever created a job that you didn't pay for with your tax dollars. That's a very, very important distinction. You'll hear a lot of talk about we are a poor state. I'll tell you, I'm personally weary of hearing about how we're a poor state. We have too often lived down to people's stereotypical impression of us. We're better than this. We really are. Facts matter. Statistical numbers matter. But the reality is this. The upside potential for our state is extraordinary, not only for the state as a whole, but specifically for this western region. We'll talk more about infrastructure, the I-69 corridor. Things are happening there for the first time ever after many decades of promises to you. So thank you for being here, and I look forward to the conversation that we'll have over the next hour.
Mr. Governor, thank you. We begin with a question from the Paducah Area Chamber of Commerce. Barkley Regional Airport is one of five commercial airports in Kentucky. It supports the region's only scheduled air service through Chicago with one-stop access to 200 destinations worldwide. The current terminal, however, was built in 1953. The FAA will not fund all of the project for a new terminal, so the remaining costs will need to come from other sources, including possibly state funding. What role do you see the state having to help fund the construction of a new terminal? And we begin with Attorney General Beshear.
Like I was saying, I have a vision for Western Kentucky, one where we are creating the jobs of the future and six-figure jobs where your kids can grow up in this community, work amazing jobs, and raise their family. That requires that we be intentional, investing in agritech, advanced manufacturing, and healthcare. And it requires that you have the infrastructure to support what I hope is an industry that will lead not just the country, but the world. Part of that is having the roads you need. That's that I-69 project. And I know in this last biennium, none of the right-of-way acquisition, utility relocation, or construction was funded. Part of it's getting that bridge built, but the other part of it is making sure that you have an airport. Because if you're going to lead the world's going to need to be able to come to you. Now, I flew out of that airport about 2 weeks ago, but unlike the governor, I flew commercial. And so when you showed up to do it, it was amazing folks that are servicing that airport. Everybody from the guy at the ticket counter to the person at the Alamo desk to the folks doing security. But if we are going to have the type of Western Kentucky that we want with an economy on fire, we have to have an airport that will work. I'm going to work with you, with this community, to make sure we have that $5 to $10 million that we need, knowing that the federal government isn't going to provide enough funds unless we can cover that last 5 to 10% or more. It means you're going to have a governor that shows up in Western Kentucky and in Paducah, that wants to know what it's like to actually fly commercial out of your airport, that's willing to live like you are and believes in their soul that we are only accomplishing if Western Kentucky can accomplish. You know, this region has meant so much to me. I wouldn't be here but for a small funeral home in Dawson Springs called the Beshear Funeral Home. My granddad made enough money sweeping floors to buy that funeral home and sent five kids to college because of it. I want to make sure we have an economy here in Western Kentucky where that's possible for every Kentucky child.
Thank you. Governor?
There is a lot of work to be done there. You haven't had a governor literally in your lifetimes that's ever put more money into our airports than I have and during this administration. I'm the only governor that's ever sat down with your entire Air Force airport board, not only with Richard as he has passed the baton in recent months, but also with Dennis as he has assumed responsibility for this. I've sat down with them in ways that previous governors, including the one immediately before me with a similar name to the fellow to my left, never took the time to do. And I think it's meant to be a snarky comment about the fact that I flew in there this morning. I did fly in there this morning. I fly in and out of there on a regular basis. I'll fly back out of there again. I'm doing it on the state plane. And the reason I'm flying out of there again is because about an hour and a half after I leave here, I'll be in another city that happens to be west of I-65, but only by a few hundred yards, unfortunately. But we will be making another announcement, $750 million investment, 1,000 jobs, tied directly and specifically to infrastructure. And this talk about the I-69 bridge, those of you who live in this community understand, and this is the bridge between Henderson and Evansville, it's been in the road plan for 20 years. 20 years you've been promised it was coming. 20 years, the last 3.5 of which the actual environmental study has been done, the engineering studies have been done. Those were accelerated because even when I was elected, those were in years to come. These things are important. It will happen in the next several years, not because of anything being promised to you, but because of things that are being done right now, specifically with this airport. It's about $2.2 million that are going to be required to do the study needed. The FAA requires that before anything will be done. It's going to be about a $35 million project. I'm fully committed, and anybody who knows anything about aviation in this state knows you've never had a governor who understands more about and is more committed to making sure, not only for Paducah, but for our entire network of airports, that we take advantage of this key asset.
Governor, thank you. The next segment now, questions to the candidates by our media panel, again focused on community business issues, not social ones. Candidates have 2 minutes for your answer. And we begin with Jennifer Horbeld. And Jennifer, please direct your first question to the Governor, Matt Bevin.
Governor Matt Bevin, thank you for being here, first of all. And secondly, on the subject of job growth and loss, our area has seen significant loss. Most recent example your opponent mentioned, Murray lost Briggs and Stratton, 600 full-time positions, many of which went to Missouri. What will you do to keep and bring back similar jobs and industry to far West Kentucky?
Take a look in that very same city. Let's talk real quickly about Briggs and Stratton. Sadly, this is a company that's in some real trouble. And truth be told, even some of those that left here won't, they'll not only not make it to Missouri, but how long they'll last there, we'll see. I wish them well. It's a great company. They've been very good to this region for a very long time. We had a lot of very thoughtful conversation with their CEO. I personally had hours of conversation with my team and with their team. I've spoken personally to their CEO about this. It was not an easy decision for them. They actually valued the workforce here more. But the cost to be able to move that facility here versus the cost to them to be able to move these people there was too high, and it came down to a purely numerical decision. It wasn't something that was going to be offset with taxpayer money. It wasn't a function of an incentive. These things are very important for us to understand, but take a look at the things that have happened in that exact community. Look at the infrastructure, the bypass around there, to be able to connect that I-69 corridor down ultimately to I-24, starting to move people through and around that community in ways that people have talked about for years and years. It's happened in the last 3 years, that type of investment. You'll see more of that. We've seen companies like DAEIL, which is a Korean company, has come in there and invested $130 million in the last couple of years. I personally went to Korea, to Seoul, met with their CEO, met with members of their board, talked to them about opportunity in our state. And indeed, they have come. And Johnny and his team have done a phenomenal job, not only investing $130 million initially, but creating 120-some-odd jobs in the community. There are other ones as well. It's always heartbreaking when somebody leaves. But it's important to understand, and you as business people understand this as well as anybody, sometimes you have to make cost-benefit analysis decisions specific to your ability to survive. And unfortunately, that's what we saw. But my commitment to this is significant, because as a business owner, I know what it takes to incentivize people to make jobs in a community.
Thank you. Mr. Attorney General, your response.
Well, I think this question shows you just how out of touch my opponent is. He's running commercials and running around the state saying that everything is great in the economy. But the question even said this area has seen significant loss. If Western Kentucky isn't thriving, if far Western Kentucky isn't thriving, I don't believe that Kentucky is thriving. But I think it goes deeper than that. We've got to look at the jobs that we have, because I only believe we have prosperity if our families are feeling prosperity. But for so many of our families, they haven't gotten a raise. Their wages haven't gone up in years. They're working just as hard as they always have, but they're falling behind. Why? Because the price of gas and groceries and pharmaceuticals go up every month. I know a teacher that right now is driving an Uber after work to make ends meet, and because she's worried that this governor is going to cut her retirement. That is wrong. We ought to be creating the type of jobs where if you work just one job and you work a hard week, you ought to be able to raise your family. That's why what I'm offering is a vision for Western Kentucky, one where we focus on investing in an industry, especially agritech, that can lift us all up. Folks, agritech right now is so important that there was an 80% increase in investment in it last year alone. Only Iowa is truly investing in it, and what's the great part of this industry? It needs to be right here in Western Kentucky. Let's connect Murray and our community colleges to the scientists that will develop that next seed that can handle the flood that we saw in the Midwest. Let's make sure that those universities are creating the data analytics jobs we're going to have to predict it. Let's create those technology companies so that our farmers can compete with any mega farm in California or anywhere else. And let's build a truly amazing public school system that we invest in, because our teachers are creating the workforce of tomorrow. And if you want to know how we're going to create the best jobs here, we're going to create the best workforce by training the best students with the very best teachers.
Thank you. Next question is from Carrie Dillard, and direct your question, please, to the Attorney General.
Attorney General, Western Kentucky, specifically our neighboring Ballard County, has recently benefited from public-private partnerships by Chinese investors. How does Kentucky continue to attract foreign investment from countries like China despite the ongoing trade war?
Well, I believe that a governor should always be on Team Kentucky. That my job once elected and my job as Attorney General is always to do what's best for you and to never let myself or my future get in the way. It's why 90 days into my term as Attorney General, and when this governor illegally cut our budgets of our universities and community colleges, when everybody told me I shouldn't do anything about it because he just won by 9% and I'd won by 0.1, I filed a lawsuit knowing it could be the end of my political career. And we recovered $18 million where it belonged, and we made sure that everyone knew that we would not be bullied here in Kentucky. It's the same thing when it comes to doing what's right for Kentucky each and every time. You shouldn't be just blindly loyal to one party or another. You shouldn't be blindly loyal to any president, no matter who they are. And when something is coming out of D.C. that's good for us, we ought to support it. You know, this president's Department of Justice has funded my cold case unit. Now, that's where we go after those serial rapists that we find through the rape kit backlog, and I appreciate the federal government's support. But when they do things that harm us, whether it is the tariff on soybeans or whether it's attempts to strip away coverage for pre-existing conditions, you ought to have a governor that stands up for Kentucky, and if they have to, stands against a federal administration. The way I'm going to push us forward is to always be on our side, because I believe when we wake up in the morning, we're dads and moms, we're Kentuckians. We're citizens of Paducah or McCracken County or Western Kentucky. We're all of those things long before we're Democrats or Republicans.
Thank you. Governor, your response.
The question, I believe, was about investments, foreign direct investments from China. So I'll try to stick to answering the question. Incidentally, let me just add before I do, I know a lot of people who drive for Uber, actually, and they make a pretty good amount of money doing it, in addition to the other jobs that they have. That's called America. It's called freedom and opportunity. So back to the heart of this question. We want people to invest here. There's a lot of things happening at the national level in terms of conversation between us and China. When the Chinese government invited every governor in the country and every leader around the world to go to China for the first ever China Import Expo, I was the only governor from the United States to go. That was not lost on people. The largest Chinese-U.S. investment gathering that will happen in the world this year happened here in Kentucky. Fell like a tree in the woods by comparison to how it was sadly covered or not by people. The Herald Leader, when this took place in Lexington, didn't even bother to show up and cover it. It was a couple blocks away from them. Hundreds of people, the ambassador from China, the head of the Bank of China, the head of the China Investment Corporation, multiple governors and vice governors from Chinese states and provinces. We had a number of businesses that were here, and they were meeting with U.S. equivalents, including multiple governors and lieutenant governors from this country. All of this happened this year in Kentucky. You never heard about it, did you? hundreds of people. And we did this because I know for a fact that, as Abraham Lincoln said, good things may come to those who wait, but only the things left behind by those who hustle. There's a lot of truth to it. The Chinese ambassador has been here to Kentucky twice in the last year and a half. Never in the history of this state has an ambassador from China ever been here. The plant that you allude to was the plant down in Wycliffe in Ballard County, the Verso plant, which was shut down under the previous governor because no effort was made to keep them there. And we worked hard to bring an investor, and indeed, this company has invested hundreds of millions of dollars, created hundreds of jobs, and has now just announced a $200 million investment down there to build a new recycling facility.
Thank you, Governor.
So this is a very important question and an important topic.
Thank you. Next question comes from Greg Dunker, and Greg, direct your question to Governor Bevin.
Governor, to enhance revenue, how do you see options that Illinois has done, like expanded gambling and recreational marijuana?
How's that working out for Illinois? Seriously, anybody? Do any of you live in Illinois by chance or do business in Illinois? I mean, how are those things working out for Illinois? They're hemorrhaging people. People are flying out of there. Their revenue is struggling. Their taxes are ratcheting up because the state is bleeding out. These are the kind of things you're probably going to hear about in the next 2 minutes when I'm done. But these things are not solutions. They're fool's gold is what they are. Would they generate some revenue? Arguably, but this assumes there's no societal cost for these things. The heart of the question is, where then does revenue come from? Revenue comes from the fundamental simple things of getting more people here and paying taxes. The end of World War II, when some of you in this room were born 75 years ago, Tennessee, Indiana, and Kentucky had the same population. We were slightly bigger than one, slightly smaller than the other one. We now have 4.5 million people. They're both 6 to 7 million people. How is this possible? We have more arable land. We have better seasons. We have better infrastructure. We have better meteorological impact on our state. We have better resources. We're rich in an abundance of things that they don't even have. And yet there are 2+ million people more than us. The only solution, Greg, to this issue is not the twinkle in the eye that comes from assuming that taking money from people who often can least afford it and creating a societal impact the likes of which is very difficult to measure, but that we know the cost is very high. That is not the solution. We need another 2 million people here. They're not going to come in the next year or 5 or 10, but over the next generation they can. And when they come here and when they pay taxes, that is the way that our state will move forward. This is how states like Texas went from being a state 25 years ago with massive problems to being one of the 10th largest economies in the world. This is why Tennessee, with a production-based tax economy, a consumption-based, I should say, as opposed to production-based, is doing what they're doing. The only solution is to create jobs here in the Commonwealth. Elect somebody who's actually done it for real in the private sector.
Thank you, Governor. Mr. Attorney General, your response.
We desperately need new, dedicated revenue for our pension system, and it will only happen if I'm elected governor. A pension is a promise. It is a promise to our selfless teachers, police officers, firefighters, and social workers. It's a promise where we say we're not going to pay you enough to do amazingly important work, teaching our children, protecting them, entering a dangerous home to protect the neglected. But we will make it up to you on the back end and promise you a secure retirement. Right now, to fund that system, otherwise, these selfless public servants have to show up every 2 years to fight for what is already theirs. We have to start with expanded gaming. We talk about being competitive. Other states are eating our lunch. It's Tennessee that just authorized sports betting. It is Indiana that has leached money off of us. And if you go right over the river, there's Metropolis. And I bet if you go into that parking lot, almost every single license plate is from Kentucky. We already lose $550 million of tax revenue from what Kentuckians bet in our border states in casinos alone. So yes, it's time for casino gaming. It's time to treat fantasy sports for what they are. It's time for sports betting, and we need to prepare for online poker, which is coming. But we need to do more than that. We need to also move forward with medicinal marijuana. I didn't get here lightly, but opioids do not work for chronic pain. And what we're doing is we're not giving people the pain management they need, but we're stocking their medicine cabinets with very dangerous pills. We need to close some tax loopholes that simply aren't fair. Listen, those of you that can afford a private jet, you don't have to pay sales tax on it. I believe that if you can afford a private jet, you should have to pay that sales tax. And I am done throwing tax incentives to out-of-state CEOs that create cut-rate jobs where you cannot raise a family. We are going to generate new revenue. We're going to put that in the pension system, and we're going to free up dollars in the general fund to make sure we fully fund public education.
Thank you. Next question comes from Ryland Barton. Please address your first question to the Attorney General.
General Beshear, Kentucky's per-student spending for state colleges and universities went down about 27% between 2008 and 2018. That's Republican and Democratic administrations. Meanwhile, in-state tuition and fees have increased an average of 4.5% per year since 2008. Here in the Purchase area, Murray State University students are paying 2.8% more in tuition and fees for this school year. Will you commit to restoring any of those cuts? And if so, how would you pay for it?
Yes, I will. Folks, I believe in the power of education and higher education. And you're going to have no better governor than Andy Beshear to stand up for K through 12 and higher education. I've already proven it to you. Because 90 days into my term as Attorney General, this governor illegally cut the budgets of Murray State, of our community colleges, and he did it while threatening to default on their bonds. I stood up to him. We went all the way to the Supreme Court. We won. We returned $18 million where it belonged, and we have prevented any cuts like that from going on in the future. But that's not enough. We have priced higher education out of reach of so many Kentuckians. I think about my dad, who grew up a poor preacher's kid just down in Dawson Springs in Hopkins County. His dad worked hard, was able to afford the University of Kentucky for him. My dad paid his way through law school and became the governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. That ought to be possible for everyone. But right now, so many people couldn't have afforded that higher education. I'm going to make sure that we stop this rising tuition because I'll tell you, I'm 41 years old. I won't tell you how old my wife is. We are still paying a student debt. That's not how people should be living. But let's also admit that we've got to get more kids in our technical schools, in our community colleges. This governor has cut funding to those. We've got to increase it. For far too long, people have tried to pit a four-year college education and a technical degree against each other. Folks, we don't have enough kids going to either. We need to make sure that every single Kentucky child is in one of those tracks, that we get down not just in high school, but in middle schools to educate them and their parents, that we can create that workforce we need, both on the technical side, but also on the four-year degree side, because I tell you, that statistic of having the third lowest per capita income in the country lines directly up with our percentage of adults with a four-year college degree. Let's work together. Let's make sure we fund Murray State. Let's make sure that we fund our community colleges. Let's give the very best to our kids and not continue spiraling tuition that's holding them back.
Sir, thank you. Governor Bevin, your response.
There are a lot of words there, and you did a good job of memorizing all those things. But I will say this, that what you didn't say is where you're going to pay for this. That was the part of the question. How are you actually going to pay for this? You're not only going to cut tuition costs, but you're also going to increase the amount of funding, but there's no solution as to where the money's going to come from. Again, you know, marijuana and gambling is only going to go so far. Incidentally, let me just touch on that, and then I'll answer this question. We have $60-plus billion in unfunded liability in our pension. If we got $100 million from legalizing marijuana, and incidentally, I also am for medicinal marijuana, but let me make it very clear to you. The idea that we would tax that as a way to make money is cruel and absolutely inappropriate. The idea that you would propose taxing a medicine that people need as a way to make money, it should be no more or less taxed than any other medicine, which, as many of you know, are typically not. As it relates to this issue in public education, you said you've prevented this, your lawsuit. You've sued me 10 times already. 9 of those have been decided. You've lost 7 of them. You've been suing me nonstop, suing the legislators that are here nonstop over any number of things, not the least of which is things like this. It costs your business people. You have to balance budgets. You actually have to make things work. You talk about the pension system. I'm the only governor in the history of this state, in the life of anyone in this room, that has ever actually funded the pension system in its entirety. We didn't have to gamble and smoke pot to do it. We did it by making hard decisions. And those dollars came from other places, not the least of which is some of the budgets that have been historically given to things like higher education. You mentioned our career and technical colleges. The career and technical colleges have seen more students than ever before because we've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in training programs focusing on non-4-year degrees. We've turned college education into an arms race, 4 and 5 times the cost, but not 4 and 5 times the output. Would I love to see more money for higher education? Of course I would. Will I make it a priority to the extent we have the money? Of course.
Thank you,
but
Governor.
The reality is we have to spend money that we have, and we can't promise money that
Thank
we
you.
Don't have.
Next question comes from Jennifer, and please direct your question to Governor Bevin.
Governor, many counties across the state are facing budget problems, including McCracken, which is currently dealing with a property assessment crisis. While that issue is complex, several local PVAs cite a staff shortage as one obstacle preventing timely assessment and new property assessment, leaving money on the table. Are you concerned there are other similar revenue sources not being taken advantage of across the state, and how would you address that?
It's a good question. I mean, with anything, you have to look at what's the return on investment to taxpayers. As was mentioned in the very intro, these are taxpayer dollars. We are public servants. We do work for you, and 100% of everything you want, education, property valuation dollars that then go back to education, et cetera, all these things, 100% of what we want for infrastructure and for textbooks and for law enforcement folks, 100% of it is paid for by you, 100% of it. So the reality is if we don't have enough of it, it's coming only from you. So how much more do you want to give, and in what areas? What areas are you willing to give up in exchange to have it somewhere else? These are hard decisions. They're not fun. It's easy to sit here and blow smoke at you and promise you stuff, but it doesn't work that way. And I will say this. You've noticed in the years that I've been governor, it's not the way I operate. I don't operate in a way where I promise you something and then deliver on it. As it relates specifically to this, this is a decision that, frankly, McCracken County specifically needs to think about, and so too do these other counties you've talked about. Where can they make investments in personnel where you can get a good return on that? If money is being left on the table in this community, it's incumbent upon your judge executive, your magistrates, your local officials, to make sure that you hire the people necessary. I understand budgets are tight, of course they are, which means something's going to have to give. But if that something that has to give doesn't generate the potential revenue that having PVAs at the table would deliver, then that would be a wise capital trade-off. These are decisions that have to be made every single day. I wish I could tell you that, hey, don't worry, Uncle Sugar's going to come down from Frankfurt and just give you all money, help you hire people. It doesn't exist. The money does not exist. This is a hard and brutal reality. This state was run by a single party for the better part of 100 years with very little interruption. And we have dug ourselves into a lot of holes on infrastructure, on pensions, on a whole lot of deferred maintenance, on a whole lot of fronts. And we're going to have to pay for them over the decades ahead.
Governor, thank you. And Mr. Attorney General, your response.
When I think about promises made and whether they're kept, I think about promises to be transparent, like to release your tax returns. I know I've kept that promise. And then I think about the promise to our most selfless public servants, our teachers, police officers, firefighters, and social workers, because that's our pension promise. The reason that our counties and cities are struggling with their budgets is because of this governor's way of addressing the pension crisis. He's only willing to consider two options. First was to illegally cut the retirements of over 200,000 public servants. I'm proud that I stopped him. But the second way he's doing it is what he's doing right now. He's pushing all of those costs down on cities and counties. And what's happening? It's requiring cities and counties to look at different taxes they can raise. Don't be fooled. This governor is raising your taxes. He's just not doing it directly to fund this pension system. I believe in new dedicated revenue, and if we want to talk about one stream of revenue that should be right here that's going over to the river in Metropolis, it is certainly our gaming dollars. That's not taking one more dollar from Kentuckians. It's keeping it right here. It's certainly an approach taken by, say, Mike Pence, who was the governor of Indiana, understanding that we have got to keep those dollars at home. But let's talk about our PVAs. They are so important. What they do is to collect the dollars that ultimately go to our school system. But if you want a governor who can work with PVAs, you got to have a governor who's not fighting his own PVA. Right now, this governor is in a battle on his multi-million dollar mansion trying to pay less in school taxes. He's trying to shortchange the kids that are going to elementary school, and he's even willing to look you in the eye and say he's going to appeal it to a board that he appointed. Talk about a conflict of interest. And meanwhile, in Frankfurt, they're trying to pull all the data that PVAs can use to create the money that fund their office into the office of Charles Grendel. Well, Charles Grendel already gets paid enough. I'm not sure there need to be any new revenue streams there. It's time for a governor that works with our PVAs, that knows their office has to be vibrant in order to collect that money to fund our schools.
Sir, thank you. Next question from Carrie Dillard. And Carrie, direct your question to the Attorney General.
Attorney General, Phase one of Kentucky Wired was completed last month in eastern Kentucky. The project aims to bring high-speed internet to rural and underserved areas, but its projected cost to taxpayers is $1.5 billion over 30 years. Do you believe the benefits outweigh the cost? And if so, what will you do as governor to ensure the project is completed statewide?
The internet and high-speed broadband is critical infrastructure. It's as important as our roads and our bridges because it's there to help our small businesses. When I was fighting against net neutrality, which is trying to keep the internet open and fair for everybody, I talked to farmers here in western Kentucky. They sold their goods through the internet all across the country, but to do that, they needed to make sure that their server or Google or whoever was directing them couldn't take them to a competitor they were invested in. That's why I recently launched an investigation against Google, who I believe is committing antitrust violations. We've got to make sure that every single area of Kentucky has broadband so that they can compete and so that they can attract jobs. But there's also vital infrastructure that in so many places also needs to be added. Look at Martin County and their lack of clean drinking water. Look at so many of our areas of our rural counties that don't have the sewer, the road, and the water to attract the jobs of the future. On Kentucky Wired, I believe in being practical. What I want to make sure is that everyone has access. So where that project is working, yes, let's continue it. Let's make sure that it is there and it is vibrant. On areas that it's not, let's sit down and let's look at the other possible alternatives. We have to find a way in not only our lifetimes, but in the next 4 years to make sure that every single Kentuckian can get on the internet, can use it to create their businesses and just look at small businesses. You know, there's a website for the Bashir Funeral Home on the internet. They have to communicate with their clients through it. This is as important to our small rural towns as it is to our big cities, and my job is going to be to make sure it's everywhere.
Sir, thank you. Governor Bevin, your response.
Clearly, we live in the 21st century. Technology and the ability for people to use these things to connect with everybody has changed the way business operates. This specifically relates to Kentucky Wired. The question was, there's the projected $1.5 billion potential cost. Each time I hear the number, it goes up. Last time I heard it was $1.2 billion. But there's a lot of projected cost as to what it might ultimately mean. Each of these, it's important to understand, assumes one thing, that there's no revenue, that we build it, and it doesn't actually have the ability to generate any revenue. If indeed it was built and nobody was charged to use it, and none of the carriers like the AT&Ts and Comcast and Windstreams and Appalachian Wirelesses and whoever else that might want to connect through this middle mile and reach the last mile, which is right up to people's doors, if they could use it at our expense for absolutely free, then indeed it might cost us that money over the years to come. But it doesn't work that way. They will, of course, pay to use this, and it'll be the revenue from that that more than justifies this. It's important to understand, though, this project was launched long before it was ready under the previous governor, Bashir. This was an absolute pig in a poke. In fact, when the poke was handed to me, there wasn't even a pig left in the poke. At that point, there really wasn't. It was a bunch of jobs, a bunch of bonds that were sold, $275 million worth of bonds backed up by you, the good faith of the people of Kentucky. No right-of-ways, no poll agreements, no easements. This was an unbelievable miscarriage of justice as it relates to how to spend your money. And the people that were involved in this were making themselves wealthy with it. We don't have time to go into the amount of corruption that has existed in this state under this attorney general and his father, members of both of their teams now in federal prison for buying and selling this state for cash. A man that he employed, a man that his father employed. Those days are over. We've put this back together. We're going to make this thing work. It is in eastern Kentucky. It's coming to western Kentucky. And it will ultimately be good for business in this state.
Governor, thank you. Next question is from Greg Dunker. And Greg, please direct your question to Governor Bevin.
Governor, tourism, of course, is very important in this end of the state. And it's being hurt by the Asian carp problem. We get a lot of news out of Washington about what they're doing about it. What can the state do in this war on carp?
There's several things, not the least of which are those things that we have been doing. If you look at how many companies are down there addressing this right now, and where they happen to be from China. They're Chinese-owned companies. When I was elected, we had two companies from China that owned any interest in employed people in the state, too. There's now more than 15, several of them here in western Kentucky. A A couple of them specifically focused on this exact issue, processing these fish, paying people to catch them, processing them, and shipping them back to Asia, where, frankly, people enjoy eating them. And incidentally, I will say this. If you've never eaten them, you should try them. They actually taste great. They're kind of hard to clean, truth be told. They will jump into your boat and knock you in the head. Some of you have probably experienced this in person. They're not an ideal fish to go out and try to catch. But I'll tell you, you incentivize people to catch these things, process them. They are this year going to probably process about 7 million pounds. 7 million pounds of those fish and sending them back to Asia. So the reality is we're doing things here at the state level. We're creating programs not only to bring the scales and the purchasing to the fishermen at the water, so that they don't have to put them in boats and bring them into the processing plant. We now have the ability to do that down there at the waterside. And we have worked very closely with the federal government, and indeed with Senator McConnell's office most recently, to bring another $25 million or so specifically addressing this issue. And it's going to involve a whole lot of things, but here's what's important to understand. We're not going to make them go away. They're here now. They're going to continue to be here. How can we mitigate the continued expansion of them into other waterways? And how can we actually turn this problem into an opportunity for this state? Again, there are more than 15 different companies now employing more than 9,000 people that are owned by Chinese investors. This is a country of 1.6 billion people. Incredible opportunity here, incredible ingenuity. And these are the types of things, as it relates to this issue and any number of others, that around the world we are going to find people to come here. We're not going to continue to fight against out-of-state CEOs.
Sir, thank you. Mr. Attorney General, your response.
Well, Asian carp is a serious issue, but let me first address that last answer on Kentucky Wireless. You know, we've gotten into the political silly season when you only get half the story. That project was launched and overseen by a Democrat, yes, Steve Beshear, and a Republican, Hal Rogers. When you only get half the story, you know you're getting the politics. On Asian carp, we are threatened, not just in those that make their living off of fishing, but also in our tourism, because we bring so many people from surrounding states into Kentucky, to areas like Land Between the Lakes, which I believe ought to be able to compete with Lake Tahoe. So yes, we must address it. But how about instead of just talking about out-of-state CEOs and their businesses, we lift up local communities? How about we try to create jobs for Western Kentuckians addressing this issue? How about we use our tax incentives to build up what we have right here? You know, the vast majority of jobs created every year are from small businesses. And your small businesses, I know you're out there today. You are the last ones to lay people off when the economy becomes difficult. Every time we build up a small business, we give ourselves true opportunity. And we may never bring Apple to Kentucky, but we can create the next Apple from Kentucky by lifting each other up. Let me also mention that as we address this, we've got to think about our lakes and our streams bigger. That's why I put out a tourist plan not long ago. It's about drawing in more tourists from our surrounding states than we're currently doing. Right now, other states are eating our lunch, maybe a fish lunch. But what we can do is we can bring these people in and we can direct them to our small businesses. And finally, let's legalize expanded gaming. The difference between Land Between the Lakes and what we see in Lake Tahoe is the world-class destinations that people can stay in. I believe that we can have that type of resort. I believe we can have that type of economic booster. And I believe that it will lift up our small businesses all around those facilities.
All right. Thank you, sir. Ryland, you have the next question, and please direct it to our Attorney General.
General Beshear, Kentucky's incarceration rate continues to go up while it drops across most of the nation. This has strained state resources and raised questions about whether the state is locking up too many people. How do you think the state should address its surging prison population?
The state is locking up too many people, and it is absolutely draining money that we need to send to other places. And the driving force behind it is this drug epidemic. This is the challenge of our times. It kills 30 Kentuckians every single week, and I've seen it personally. About 2 years ago, I pulled an overdosing man from a car in downtown Lexington. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. He stopped breathing for about 3 minutes. You look at the different shades that somebody turns when they die, it changes you. Narcan brought him back, and thankfully he's gonna have another chance, but this is what our families are experiencing day in and day out. It's why I've become the most aggressive attorney general in this country at going after opioid manufacturers and distributors, because 80% of new addiction is caused by pills. It's why I stood next to Emily Walton when we sued the makers of Opana, a drug that took the life of her son, TJ, who was going to deploy for our country 3 days later. It's why I launched the Kentucky Opioid Disposal Program aimed at cleaning out every single medicine cabinet across the country. It's why I sued Johnson & Johnson, a company that Oklahoma just got a $570 million verdict against. And this governor went on CNBC the day I sued them and said he wasn't for that or for anything else that I do. What we have done directly is to create the Rocket Docket and to fund it. It was there a couple years before I came in. It gets people out of the criminal justice system and into treatment as quickly as possible. Folks, people who are suffering from addiction don't need to go to jail. They need to go to treatment. They don't need to get a record that's going to hurt them getting a job in the future. They need to get the help that they need. We have all been touched by addiction. We've all seen it in our friends and our family members. It's time that we invest in a real way for prevention, for treatment, and for recovery. I got to fight for a better world. I have a 9 and a 10-year-old growing up in the most dangerous time for drugs that we have ever seen. I want to leave them a legacy of a safer world, and that will significantly reduce our incarcerated population.
Sir, thank you. Governor Bevin, your response.
Sure. Let me respond, first of all, to something that was just said. If you remember nothing else from the time that you spend here with the two of us on this stage, please understand as a straight-up matter of fact that for all the talk about attacking the opioid crisis, for all the talk about suing opioid makers, for all the talk about being tough on this issue, the man to my immediate left, to your right, is a man who has been involved in one settlement ever in his entire life with an opioid producer. And it was when he defended Purdue Pharma against the people of Kentucky. He and his law firm profited from, and he personally profited from, and refuses to answer questions about how much he profited from, the fact that this, you've never said this publicly, you're stating publicly you got no money ever from this as a result of your firm's settlement.
I didn't. Purdue Pharma was a client of the firm.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't.
You were a partner with that firm.
Any of the settlement.
Gentlemen, if we could just.
This is a conspiracy.
Mr. Attorney General. Mr. Attorney General, if you could please let the governor finish his time.
Here's the reality. Sure. He's been involved in one settlement. They defended Purdue Pharma against Kentucky for $24 million. Oklahoma just got $270 million from the same exact maker, who now has agreed to spend $12 billion to settle with 23 other states. It was an absolute crooked deal between him and the outgoing attorney general, who got four of that 24 to go to a law firm that didn't even have a contract with us, and Jack Conway is now a partner with there. Shame on you for pretending to represent this, for speaking so eloquently about your heartbreak for this when you have done nothing. You've brought $0 for all your efforts. You've sued me more than you've sued these drug makers. And the reality is this. We've brought over $90 million from the federal government, tens of millions in our budgets, to this issue. The question was about our prisons. We have expanded our prison population, not one lick. I've made clear I'm not building more prisons. And the rapid increase that you ask about Ryland happened under the previous governor and the governor's before
Governor,
that.
Time. Thank you.
It has leveled off in recent years.
Time, Governor. We have a question now. Time for one more, I believe, from Jennifer. And Jennifer, please direct your question to Governor Bevin.
Governor, the median household income in Kentucky is $48,000. Both of you have said wage growth is a focus in this campaign. What's your plan to attract higher-paying jobs to the state, jobs people can live on, and what do you view as your biggest obstacles in that effort?
These, again, the job creation is what I do. It's where I come from. I'm a small business owner. When the state of Kentucky and every other state was penalized by the federal government of the previous administration with the threats of the overtime rule, and those of you in this room know how devastating that would have been to your small businesses. Did the Attorney General defend you? No. Does he defend any of the laws that are upheld by our legislature and signed into law? He doesn't, even though he took an oath to do it. So he doesn't actually fight for you on this issue. I had to go on behalf of the state with my team and sue on behalf and get that pushed back. These are the kind of things that I understand. It's the world I come from. I've created hundreds and hundreds of jobs through the years from companies that I've started and run. Specifically as to how you get wages to increase, you know full well. The only way to get wages to increase is to have competition, to have more people here competing for the talent that we have, to bring more people here to do these jobs. When everybody was chasing HQ2, I went out and said, I don't want half the brain of Amazon, I want the heart of that company. Some of you probably aren't even aware of the fact they're building their world shipping hub in Kentucky right now, a multi-billion-dollar project which will generate thousands of jobs. Because I went to Seattle, I spent time with people there and here to make sure that that brought opportunity here. Nucor is building the most advanced steel mill in the history of this country west of I-65 in Meade County, $1.5 billion project, because we went out and out-hustled people. The way this is done is by electing a person who can sit with CEOs, sit with boards, sit with decision makers, talk to them experience to experience, and make the case for why come here. We've had over $22 billion in private capital invested in Kentucky in the last 3.5 years. We never in our history had a 10-year period where there was that much. So we are starting to see things, but it isn't going to happen overnight. It will take decades, but it starts by getting our tax structure right and the incentive for people to come here correct and stop vilifying out-of-state
CEOs. Governor, thank
you.
Mr. Attorney General, your response.
I'm going to address the question, but let me just point out that we both just had an opportunity to talk about this drug epidemic, the challenge of our times and the threat to our kids. I talked about what I'm doing in creating a safer world. I talked about the efforts we need to make as a state, and this governor used his time to attack for political points. That ought to tell you everything that you need to know. And this concept that I haven't brought money into the state, whew, we've returned $98 million to Medicaid from people who are defrauding the system. We've returned $29 million to the general fund for consumer protection. We've returned $97 million to Kentuckians in consumer restitution. I got a $22 million settlement with Marathon that I want to put to rural roads. We got nearly $100 million of value in the Volkswagen settlement. I've returned $2.5 million to seniors that had that money stolen from them, and I've cut $2.1 billion of requested rate increases in your water and in your utilities. I think that's an ROI, return on investment, that this governor couldn't give you as the head of a state or as the head of a company. As far as creating jobs and raising wages, how about we invest in industries where the salaries are six figures? How about you finally get a governor focused on Western Kentucky that will do it right here? I've not only given you a vision that prioritizes Western Kentucky through jobs and infrastructure, I've given you plans on how to do it. This governor says we're just getting started. My comment is, well, where you been in Western Kentucky? We're going to invest in agritech, advanced manufacturing, and healthcare. We're going to fight to preserve healthcare, including expanded Medicaid, because this governor's plan would shut down rural hospitals. Just talk to them. We're going to invest in public education because we've got to create the workforce for those amazing jobs. And this governor's approach threatens each and every one of our public school system. I'm going to be a governor that fights for our families, that cares about our prosperity, that isn't worried about the out-of-state CEO, but is focused on you.
Sir, thank you. Okay, I understand we're going to have time for one more question. So now we go to Carrie. And Carrie, please direct your question to the Attorney General.
Attorney General, we've heard from our local school districts that while SEEK funding has increased, the pension burden and unfunded mandates set by the recent school safety bill are weighing heavily on their budgets. What role do you see the state taking in order to alleviate the financial burden to these school districts from SB 1?
I believe in Kentucky's public schools. I'm a graduate from Fayette County's public schools, and I wouldn't be where I am, but I also don't think I'd be who I am without my teachers. Yet for the last 4 years, our teachers have been bullied. They've been called names. They've been called drowning victims that need to be knocked out and drugged ashore. And they've even been accused of causing harm and crimes to children. Our teachers deserve so much better. The fact is, in most of Kentucky, we only have one type of school, and it is a public school. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent, your kids go to it. And it is absolutely essential that we fund it in a way where we can lift our kids up. This governor will tell you he's fully funded public education. He hasn't. The SEEK formula is 15% below when adjusted by inflation. And my running mate, assistant principal at Nelson County High School, had to lay off 10 people based on his budget. Had $0 for textbooks and technology. How do we compete? Not just with Indiana, but with India. Ask any teacher, ask any school system. This governor is an existential threat to public education. I announced my plan yesterday. I'm going to be the best governor for public education this state has ever seen. And we are going to address that pension system with new dedicated revenue where I keep my promise to every single teacher across this state. Public education is one of the biggest differentiators in this campaign. If you believe in it, you should vote for me. If you don't, the governor may be your guy.
All right, sir, thank you. I apologize for interrupting. We had a little blip over here. Governor, your response, please.
Could you remind me what the question was?
Please, Carrie, yeah, go ahead.
While SEEK funding has increased, the pension burden and unfunded mandates by the recent school safety bill are weighing heavily on school districts' budget. What do you see the state's role in alleviating that financial burden?
I think, again, the key is to figure out what are the priorities within our school system. Again, you can poo-poo it all you want, but I am the only person that's ever put forward a budget as governor that funds the pension system. I'm also, incidentally, the only governor in the history of Kentucky. This comes back to where money's come to our school systems from. The only governor since we've had a lottery for 30 years, when you were promised that it was for funding what? Education. How many of you really believe that's where all the money's gone? It hasn't, and you know it. It's been a joke. It's been a well-known joke, but not one that's funny. I'm the only governor that for the last 3.5 years has put 100% of the money into education. There's also more money going into the SEEK formula per pupil classroom instruction, as well as more absolute dollars into the SEEK formula than ever in the history of this state under this administration. These are some dollars going in. The question is, where is money going to come to provide safety for our schools? This is something that matters very dearly to me. The time that I spend in Marshall County, I won't spend articulating to you, but I will tell you, you talk about something that changes your perspective on a lot of things. I hesitate to call her out, but the mother of one of the students who was killed is here today, is a dear friend, is her family. I'm grateful for the fact that she's taken time to be here. This sure matters to her. She has another child who's in that school. So do everybody else. The students, the teachers, the administrators, the people that go in and out of these schools, we better find the money to make sure our schools are safe. And the fact of the matter is, it's not going to be so prohibitive that we won't be able to find this in the budget. You watch what happens in the next budget I put forward. We will make sure that we come up with a way, to the extent possible, to protect the people who go in and out of our schools. And we will do it without robbing the teacher's pension, as the previous governor and others before him have done. We do not need to rob other systems in the pension in order to do what's right. It's a function of finding out what is the greatest priority, then make sure we put the money there first.
All right, Governor, thank you. And thank you to our media panel. That concludes this portion of it. We will now move to our last segment of the forum. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for his closing remarks. And we begin according to a coin toss held earlier. So we begin with Attorney General Andy Beshear.
I want to thank you all for having me today. And yes, you've heard some very different viewpoints. But something happened today you probably didn't expect. We agree on something. We agree that you should think about who you would choose to be your CEO. Would it be somebody that has bullied his employees or would bully your employees like this governor has with teachers? Would it be somebody that couldn't get along with the CFO like this governor's fight with his lieutenant governor? Would it be someone who would give exorbitant salaries to his buddies on your company dollar like he has with his friends? Would it be someone who would refuse to say what your company is paying him because he refuses to release his tax returns? Would it be someone who treats company property like their playthings? Because to take a state plane to a political debate is wrong. And would it be someone who uses their position to get things for themselves, like a mansion at half price from a state contractor? That is not the CEO you would trust with your company. No, you would look for someone that has vision, that has ideas and plans to move your region and your company forward. Somebody who gives you a future for the next 30 years, that has a true idea of investing in agritech, that can create six-figure jobs across this region, that is willing to use transportation dollars to meet your needs in that I-69 bridge and the corridor right here. You would look for somebody that you would be proud of to serve as your CEO, and how about somebody that simply governs by the golden rule? You know, doing right by our neighbors is about protecting healthcare. It's why I fight this federal government and this governor who are trying to tear away coverage for pre-existing conditions. Doing right by our neighbors is about protecting healthcare. I mean, about investing in education, which is why we are proposing that $2,000 teacher raise. Doing right by our neighbors is about protecting people's promised retirements, and doing right by our neighbors is about creating jobs. Folks, I don't just want to be your governor. I want to govern well. And we're going to govern well right here in Western Kentucky.
Attorney General, thank you. Governor, your closing remarks.
Again, thank you for being here. Thank you for being small business owners and mid-size and large business owners. Thank you for employing people. Thank you for creating the wealth of the Commonwealth. for creating the tax base that affords us the ability to pay for those things we actually have money for, and for some to even be able to make promises for things we don't have money for. But the truth be told, thank you for being people who make even these things possible at all. You have been asked to think about who you would elect. Only one of the two of us is going to be the next governor. It really is that simple. You don't get part of me and part of him, part of the two of us and part of someone else you might like. It's going to be one of the two of us. Which one of us would you sit down in front of your employees? Which one of us would you trust to run your business in your absence? If you had to leave your business to one of us for a year or two or five or ever to run on your behalf, if you had to ask one of us to look out for the best interest of your community economically, which one of us would it be? Would it be somebody who has no experience here but says a lot of the right things, or somebody who's actually done it? I submit to you that while neither one of us is a perfect person, you're never going to find a perfect person that will put themselves forward. I humbly ask for your vote. You don't owe it to me. You may be a registered Republican, doesn't mean you should vote for me because you are. You may be a Democrat, doesn't mean you shouldn't vote for me. I ask you to vote your values. What values do you care about? What values about job creation? What values about protecting the life of every single Kentuckian? What values do you care about as it relates to respect for the rule of law and security of our borders in this nation's constitution? Defense and respect for people in law enforcement, in our military. These are the things that I ask you to think about. What values would you fight for? What values do you want your children and grandchildren to have the opportunity for? Vote those values, not your party, and the right person will emerge from this. $22 billion in capital investment, 57,000 jobs, lowest unemployment in the history of this state. All these things have happened not by accident, but by simple disciplines. If you reelect me, I will commit to you that I will fight for you like I would fight for my own family, and I will continue to defend the Commonwealth of Kentucky
like
I defended this nation when I wore her uniform 30 years ago.
Thank you both. And I ask that when you leave the stage, you please return to your program table. And please, everyone, join me in a round of applause for our two candidates.